and welcome back to A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where your host, myself, Cole Brissenge, you get to sit down with interesting people. We get to talk about their field of work, what makes them tick, what makes their businesses survive, and what possibly stresses them out day to day. So today I have Sergey. Sergey, can you introduce yourself and where you're from?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Sergey Basantsev, or Sergey Basantsev. I am an account manager for First American Insurance Company, First American Title Company, and we're a local startup company just 6 months into the game.
All right. So I wanted to talk today about you specifically, how you got into the work, some of the pitfalls that you've seen some people fall into, and how to avoid them. So real quick, you talked about this a little bit last time you were on the show, but tell us how you got into title and escrow.
Yeah, I got invited to apply to a receptionist job is essentially how I got in. And I'm learning that this is a career we talked about a little bit last time where you get invited into it and you sink or swim because there's no training manual. You learn on feel in the local industry, and that's how you get in. You get invited into this. It's kind of or you apply entry level. And that's really how it is, because it's just tough to get in. There's not a lot of us doing the work. And so when there's an opening, it doesn't come by often.
Really?
Yeah.
So are these companies just like they're not super eager to bring in new people to the fold?
No, because it is seasonal. Like, it's feast or famine every year. We feast during the summer because that's when houses sell. It's beautiful here, so come visit and take a look and buy your house. And the winter times are gloomy and rainy and wet, so it doesn't sell as much. And so you have to keep your employees paid through both seasons.
Right.
And so the company typically doesn't want to fluctuate too much with staffing. And so it is process driven on, like, hey, this is our process, and we have to either apply more time to the process by overtime in the busy months. And so you can't spend all your pennies, because you know that in the winter months, well, it's like, hey, maybe we can't work 40 hours this week, so we took furloughs. Like, it's not uncommon to take a furlough because the company is not making the same revenue.
Right.
Yeah, so absolutely. So we don't want, we typically don't want to hire, and then because there's a learning curve to the industry.
For sure. So in a previous episode, you described the workforce as it's getting smaller and it seems to be getting older as well. So how do you feel like the industry is kind of compensating for that? Are they making any general moves?
I don't know. I don't know how the industry is going to be bringing people in, because this conversation I was privy to 8 years ago when I came on, because I'm thinking, hey, I'm the youngest guy and I got in here by accident. How did everyone else get in? Like, how do we bring people in? Like, where's the entry level job? And there isn't one when there's just 2-3 companies around.
So that was going to be another question I was going to bring up about those entry level positions, how someone would even get into this field in the first place.
You get invited is the historical, what I remember, or you respond to an ad. And because, like, right now we're hiring, we're looking for an entry level position.
There you go.
Should you ask? And there's no particular skill set that we're absolutely like, hey, you need this. You're going to check all these boxes. It takes a personality that succeeds. It
takes a personality. What kind?
A curious mind. Because you have to work with the goal of closing the deal. And so you have to accomplish the tasks. And there's not enough for someone to always hold your hand. And so it takes a quick learner, someone who's inquisitive.
Someone that's probably a little bit independent too.
100%. Yeah, there's the system and the process doesn't allow for too many errors. And not a lot of training, unfortunately. That's just what it is. Now, First American is really interesting because they have made a streamlined process. So if you know anything about Kaizen, or you've talked about Kaizen, lean manufacturing, I studied a little bit when I was in my manufacturing job, and I realized that the process dictates the outcome. So if you make phone calls as your entry level, or as your customer entry experience, like, you're going to do a phone call every single time and have that connection. If you're not told to do that, some days you might, some days you won't. some days, some weeks pass by and you're like, did I call anyone this morning? Does your process dictate the outcome? And so there's room for people to come in and excel really quick in title and escrow.
Mm. So what does it take for someone to become that excelling agent?
You have to be able to do the work and show up and push really hard and pivot with every specific interaction. And so be able to juggle a whole lot. There's a systems that help you, but really there needs to be a bulldog type attitude, especially if you're going to excel. If you're coming into this industry, especially with the succession that's going to happen, the plan is we hope we have enough people who are hungry enough to do the work, because it takes a lot of hours. It takes a lot.
So what kind of work does that actually entail?
Sure. It's taking a contract from the beginning and saying, okay, these are the buyers and sellers. Like, let's get all their information. And then you figure out what is being transferred, for how much, what is owed against it, who's lending, are they lending? The lender needs to communicate. And so there's a lot of moving parts that escrow has to maintain on every file. And so everyone at all times needs to know where every file is at, because changes do happen.
A lot of data collection and data keeping.
It's a lot of data keeping. It's a lot of, it's coordinating. So escrow does a lot of coordinating with a lot of different parties, because maybe there's a HOA, there's taxes, there's a lien, there's a judgment, there's a divorce, there's a deed of trust from a long time ago. And there's so many issues that you need to treat every transaction in a standardized way, but very unique to each situation. So it's a lot. It's a demanding job that requires someone who pays attention, who is eager to work and eager to push themselves.
Right.
Because once you do, they scout for talent very sharply to be the next escrow closer. Because if you have that personality to connect and to connect with people on the niche market, like the experience that they're in, like escrow is like a small portion, but massively impactful if it's done wrong. And so that human typically gets put on a track to be like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to be a title officer or an escrow person, because we are looking for these talents. And that's how people get replaced, if they get replaced.
So before we get too far into title and escrow, let's just talk about the field in general.
Oh,
again, like even getting into it. What are the big reasons to get into this field?
Man. Title and escrow?
Yeah. Is it just that it pays consistently and it pays well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it pays well. It's a great question, because I have seen people come into it for all sorts of reasons. Mm. There's one that was an agent for many years and said, well, I'm done being a real estate agent, so I'm going to be an escrow because I've seen enough contracts. And turns out that experience helps her a lot.
All right.
Because she has seen the work. She's played that role. She understands the capacity. So she's able to serve her clients knowing that, hey, I know what you're going through because I've been there with many other buyers and sellers. So her value set is a little different in an experience than someone else who's like, hey, I came in because my mom's friend's a realtor and said, hey, whatever company's hiring, I'm going to go and check it out. And then you discover that, wait, I could just work hard and it pays me more, or I can, like, the more my team does, the more I make. And so that there's an incentive there that to the right person, it triggers them to say, hey, we could make a living out of this and a career. And it's again, the acquisitive mind, you're always learning something new. So you're expecting that. And if someone's expecting that, like, it gives a different approach to the job.
It's really rewarding to the person who's like a little bit ambitious.
A little, yes.
So, like, inversely then, who are the kinds of people that really shouldn't ever consider getting into the field?
Someone who runs a different pace of life, a slower pace of life. Like, I have a friend who's successful, and I'm always like, if I had a little bit of your slowness and chill, because I'm pretty amped up human, I would have a better quality of life. And he goes and says, if I had a little bit of your energy, I would be a little bit more successful in my business. And so I'm like, it's not about work ethic, because yeah, everyone that shows up to work, I believe, wants to work. Typically, if you don't like what you work, you're there for either the money or for the people. Otherwise, find another job. So typically people come in and you're like, okay, I like to work and I like how much they pay me. And there's always room for growth. And so escrow and title always provides the fact that you could get a title officer position and you're desirable. You're a commodity that isn't expandable. And so there is security there. So once people come in, you're like, oh, I could do this. And so that's, yeah, because there's everyone that's college and, you know, multiple degree educated to someone who's a college dropout and does the same work. But it's the personality and the human that is like, okay, this is the person that's made for this work. And so, yeah.
That's an interesting way to frame it. And I like it. Because one of the things, and I know we're going to talk about this next time you're on the show a little bit more, is that it really does seem like it's, you're part of a corporate structure. You mm-hmm. have a supervisor, district mm-hmm. manager, I'm mm-hmm. sure. But you seem to operate as if you're largely self-employed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never had a commission-paid job before. Mm. As a title officer, you get a salary and you're like, hey, this is what your salary, which equates to a certain hourly, and we want you to work overtime. And you're like, sweet, I get to make as much money because there's always the title work is just always work to do.
Right.
There's not enough and there's a high volume. And so I guess to answer your question briefly, I don't know how to answer your question briefly. Can you repeat it, to be honest?
Oh, it's just like, it seems like you're self-employed.
Oh, yes. Okay. So yeah. So where did I go with that? This is the first time I'm self-employed. So when I jumped into my role as a sales guy, it is self-employment. Mm-hmm. Like I, especially First American, as a startup, they say, hey, this is what you owe us every month. And you pay your dues. And then from there, we have the ability to save money and squirrel it away for a new office like we just did. We're opening up next week on Monday.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's where it is a little governance of ourselves and our time and our energies and what we do and the service we provide. It is very self. Like I wake up every morning and do whatever I want to do.
Mm.
And
that probably means that there are some days where you're like, well, I choose to work till 10 at night because I need to, or I get to.
100%. And I'm a part-time dad. And so I have my kids 1 week. I have my kids, no kids the other week. And my workflow absolutely ebbs and flows. And that's where structuring of your time. And, you know, we'll talk about this is my greatest strength. Mm. Like my superhero power. I've got two of them. And one of them is time management. And so that, you know, that's where it is the entrepreneurial where it's like, it is on me. Like my escrow, like we were talking about, my escrow officer can go and meet agents everywhere. And I meet people all the time who don't really need me, but they really need a good escrow closer.
Right.
And so my role is to then remove myself as this position of, hey, I could bring you something because you've already told me. So let me see where I could supplement with a service. It's, you know, it's catering to people where they're individually at.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to frame it. So moving on to a different kind of question then. People who are in the field, whether they're new or maybe they've been in there for a little while, what are some of the pitfalls that are common in title and escrow?
Well, title and escrow and real estate all in general, I think when people think that it's black and white, very little is black and white.
Okay.
Because there's so many instances where it's you choose your own adventure and we roll with the adventure that as we encounter it. And so that's one of my biggest pitfalls as a title officer. I'd come in and say, and with the mindset of like, it's either one side or the other. It's either a liability or it's not. It's either an issue or it is not an issue. But we want the transaction to keep moving. And so I learned that, hey, what applied to yesterday's interaction and transaction and situation looks very similar. But if you look at this one little tiny nuance detail, changes everything.
Mm.
And so that is where it's a little bit tricky in the sense that, man, there's a lot of unexpecteds.
All these small little details.
Yeah. It's a choose your own adventure, but you're also like, it's like a pinball rolling down a hill. You're like, which way are we going to go? It depends on what we encounter in the histories or with people's families or whatever the situation is. Like, I had one where the buyers said, can we move in on a Friday, even though we're like closing on Monday? And the seller was like, sure, I don't live there. It was my dad's estate. Well, second son comes on a Saturday and say, what are you doing moving to my dad's house?
Right.
And he's like, oh, we were closing on Monday. We like paid the money already. And that is something that you have to pivot. And typically people don't want to hold on to homes. No one cares about the home. They care about the money.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, who's getting paid? That changes. And that, like, that's not an uncommon situation where it changes last minute. Something comes up. Life events or discoveries. Mm-hmm. Or so, like, we look for elder abuse. And so some things were like, you have to be like a little bit able to change directions and be able to compensate and accommodate and be and work with people. It's working with people.
Elder abuse, is that a common concern?
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah, we see a lot of abuse, and that's a fraud. That's a type of fraud. But yeah, we see a lot of that.
Oh. Is that just like the kids want the estate and mom and dad maybe aren't in the most?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, they're not all there.
Well, I think statistically, the most people that are going to rob you are people you know. Like, especially identity theft. Like, I think say, like, identity theft typically primarily happens by people you know. And so when the opportunity is there and the relationship is strained and it looks like it's easy, even a good person will be tempted by a cheat.
Right.
You know, and so we have to be aware of that, and we play a place to uphold, you know, the same, you know, I don't know the way, but to make the legitimacy of the transaction is what title and escrow is primarily concerned about. Like, we're insuring people's ownerships. We're insuring people's investments.
Because you really are like at the very end of that train track, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. And people, you know, people do all sorts of things to get away with all sorts of things. And so title and escrow sometimes have to be the bearer of bad news. But then how do you facilitate that? That matters as well.
Are you able to give us an example of like sometimes they're like they're just about to finish up, but then like something really wrong has just been identified?
Yeah. So here in Washington State, to be a personal representative or as an executive of an estate, you can't be a felon.
Really?
No. Yeah. It disqualifies you from serving in that capacity. Now, what if your felon record is in California? And now you're selling mom's house here, and your brother from Michigan says, wait, why is she signing? Did you guys know that she's a felon? And we're like, hold the phone.
That's rough.
Because we check, as a title officer, I'm going to check every name. Are you a felon? I'm looking for ways to disqualify. I'm always a title officer. I'm looking for ways to be like, this is an issue. This is how we, and that's one of them. And running people's backgrounds, and you know, we sleuth people a little bit to see, hey, are you even reliable to sign on behalf? Because the law may allow this much, but if we're insuring and we're paying our money, man, we have a very narrow door that you have to fit through. And oftentimes people change shapes like that, and it happens where it's like, hey, we have a disqualified, and the courts don't run for that. The courts say, are you a felon? Sign this and say you're not. Because we don't have the man staff to just search every single person that files a suit. So they're like, that's fraud in the courts. So then for us, it starts a whole different, like, and the selling the buyer is like, wait, what? It's extended because of this. I mean, that's the pitfalls that happen. Now, if you are not using a title company and you just take that deed, like, that's a situation where the brother was like, you don't have a house. Because that's fraudulent. And the courts will say, yeah, you don't have a house anymore. And so that's where, like, you know, if you took a deed in that sort of manner from an estate and the state representative says, hey, here's the court order that gives me the powers to sign. It's legitimate. But in our sense, we have to go the extended mile and say, is it still legitimate because it was 4 months ago?
Right.
Or did you just get convicted as a felon for fraud and stealing and forgery in California? And your brother was like, that's his history, you know, and that does happen. Or people come out of the woodwork and say, whoa, my dad, I'm like a son from my dad's first. I'm a child from my father's or my mother's high school pregnancy. And they have this family now and he's deceased and they're getting all the money. And well, not anymore because we just discovered you.
Right.
And now you own 50, you know, you're entitled to 50% of that estate. So that changes everything. And those are the kind of things that title and escrow are imperative. And lenders are like, I'm not going to give money until I'm insured that I could give you money.
Right. That sounds like that's, again, like I call back to this insurance fellow that I was talking to before, where like when something bad happens, sometimes they have to bring bad news.
Mm-hmm.
And then that can suck.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine when you have to put on that hat, that can probably bring out some of the worst in people.
Yeah, but I, as a Russian kid, I grew up translating for my parents. And so I took these concepts that are, you know, adultish, and they're telling a 13 or a 12-year-old, and the 12 or 13-year-old is then going to tell it to these adults who would need to make a decision. I learned how to take concepts, digest them, and translate them into a way that's relatable and understandable.
That's a good skill.
And that's a skill that I'm realizing with title insurance. Man, there are ways to use words. Like I've heard, like I called it title poetry because I discovered that there's a way to talk that is gives me the outcome that I want.
Right.
I've heard coworkers get off the phone and in my head, I'm like, man, why did you use the words that you used? Because I now have additional questions and I know the job. And that doesn't help. I'm now frustrated on behalf of the person that doesn't even exist in my head. Like, I just know that you talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me a valuable asset at both companies with the escrow side of things. Because do you go to title officer ABC or do you go to Sergi, who I know will formulate the explanation in a way that people can be diffused because it's all figure outable. There's nothing scary. But the unknown for any capacity is always scary. So the more people know, the more knowledgeable, the better buyers they seem to be. And so
I heard a line once from it was a marketing course that I was going through passively. And he had a good line where it was that the people who sell the most aren't the ones that are selling the cheapest product. They're mm-hmm. not even selling the best product. They're selling the most understandable product.
Mm-hmm.
That's stuck with me. And I think it's true.
And the rarity of a title officer becoming an account manager is non-existent in my industry.
Really?
Because title officers like to be behind a screen for many, many hours. Like I would blow through books because I'd be like, okay, boom, boom, headphones in. I'd go through 4 books a month on long book months.
That's awesome.
Like because the job requires you to be constantly examining. And so there's no human interaction. And the right person, man, I struggled with it because it wasn't made for me. But I was good at it because I was inquisitive enough. Right. And I kind of like it. I like, you know, people say, oh, you like you swallow the toad or the turtle, whatever the expression is. You know, like I like the hard work. So when it was difficult because I like people, I made a way to use my people skills in a manner that made me invaluable. And I was able to communicate these concepts to foreign buyers, sellers, old people that are like, what is this? I bought a house when I was 20 and I'm 80, I'm selling a house. What am I doing? Like, and you want what, how, the questions, everything. Man, you could derail someone's business practice. An agent who's worked with these old folks, you could derail that relationship by being ununderstandable or unrelatable or not helpful.
And what's funny is that you could be entirely right in what you are telling mm-hmm. them. You're very clinical, very accurate, but it's like at a certain point, a client can only have a valuable conversation with a doctor if it's at a certain level. Once you pass that threshold.
Yes.
Ah.
And when I became a title officer for a commercial title officer, I learned really quickly by someone's expression that every email I send is a bill that he gets. Every phone call I make is a bill that he gets. So enough of the emails, enough of the phone calls. And I was like, oh, that's a consideration of every client now that I work with. And so I was able to adapt and change my practice that also grew our business because now it changes how the attorney is working with the title company. And there's a lot of intertwining there. We work very closely with a lot of attorneys. And so that really does matter. The human matters.
Yeah, that a good human element just makes all the difference.
Yeah, and there's another title officer that does what I do. So sometimes I do sit with people who bring me title reports with their clients, and it's not my title. Mm. It's not my transaction. But these people need help. And I'm like, okay, this is why I'm here. It doesn't pay me, but as a resource, like I give. And so
it's ultimately just betters off the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, because I'm building relationships as well. So let me help your clients as much as I can to give them an experience, because I know that's going to benefit the client. Like, my client are agents. So I know that if I treat their clients good, it's going to reflect. It pays. It trickles.
It's funny. I was talking to, it was a bank manager, general manager of one of the, you know what, I won't say the name because that doesn't matter. But it was funny because they're like, hey, yeah, banks are all kind of the same. We can only vary our stuff so much. Mm-hmm. And so you know what we do? Whenever you call, you don't go to an answering machine. It's always someone that picks up and you can have a conversation with
them. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we talked about title insurance last time, where the industry had a moment in time where we relied heavily on offshore operations and the service was so abysmal that all title company practices are like, let's bring it back to the States. Let's bring it back to the local people. Yeah. And so that stint offshore did nothing for the succession plan that we're looking at here in the next 8 years, where it's like, we didn't replace anyone because we didn't have to bring anyone in.
And all right.
Are we going to job fairs? Nah. Maybe. I don't see anyone at a job fair. Because how else do you hear about title and escrow? I have no idea. I'm in it.
But yeah, because that is one of those things. So here, different question then. Because we've talked about how these title and escrow companies, it doesn't seem like they throw big doors open because they want tons and tons of people coming in. It's a bit of a trade. It's slow to grow into it. Mm-hmm. But you start as a receptionist and you've eventually grown into an accounts manager. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do you think that's typical for people who get into title and escrow, where they really just rise through the ranks?
Yes.
That's it, eh?
Yes. Or they find their niche and they're like, ooh, like there are some customer service reps who are incredible knowledgeable professionals. Yet they don't get paid the sexy amount and they don't have the sexy title, but they've been doing it for so long that, man, their experience of knowledge is just, they found their niche.
Right.
And it's enough that they love it and they stay. But again, how do you get into it? Like, one person comes to mind, I'm like, no, she stumbled into it too. Everyone did. And a lot of them, I mean, there's multiple married couples in the industry.
Really?
There are roommates, college roommates that still work together. There are people that have went the whole gamut of life together for the last 20, 30 years. You know, and so
just a tight knit.
It is tight knit.
It's a little bit of like an exclusive club.
A little, because there's no room for variation because we're so, you know, it's an interesting type clientele. Mm-hmm. It's a measured metered amount of clients. Mm-hmm. Like many licenses are held in Whatcom County. Well, that's all my clients.
Right.
And so there's only enough to go. Like, there's, like, if you look at Seattle or even Tri-Cities, well, there's 14 title companies. Mm. There are 7 title companies, and they all have to operate within the same rules, guidelines about what sets them apart. And so it may be easier to get into the industry in a different location than Whatcom County, when there's just a handful. You know, there's 4 companies now.
So with the idea of, like, we talked about how the work that you do, it's worth viewing it as being effectively self-employed. Mm-hmm. It's a fair way to view it. Mm-hmm. If someone was to go out there and say, I want to start my own title and escrow side business or small business, whatever that looks like, do you think they have a viable chance of really doing well?
Yes. Because, well, not in Whatcom County.
Really?
Not in Whatcom County, because there isn't the community fluctuation that you could rely on meeting new people. I only say that because if you look at King County or Pierce County, Snohomish, Everett, those are way bigger fluctuations of populations areas. And so their communities look a little different, where Whatcom County is a little special. You know, the same with like other isolated counties like Omak County, it's a little special because it just doesn't grow the same. It doesn't come and go the same. But for a title company to come in here, there's another one. I don't know what that would look like, because it's been tried and done before and failed really quick.
Really?
Yes. Other people have come and gone or maintained very small market share, because to grow legacy relationships, and if it's not legacy relationships, the value have to add has to outmatch and outweigh the legacy relationship.
That's a lot to ask for someone who has very few resources.
Yes. Yeah. And so we, as like my partner and I, we have the relationships established at our previous employer. And so now we got the platform that comes and arms us and equips us that we're like, okay, it's worth jumping out. Otherwise, right. The typical format is a title company comes in and says, I'm going to buy you and make you first American. So it's a little different and it's tough to jump into it.
That's interesting. Do you think it'll be like in 10 years time when our county expands by 40% population wise, do you think then it'll be different, more viable? Really?
Yeah, I don't see, I think we're a fluke. Shay and I with First American and Robin and Claudia, we are an exception to a lot of the rules.
It's like, that's got to feel pretty special.
Though. It does. Because with what we've been able to accomplish, puts us on multiple maps and radars because it typically doesn't go this way.
Right.
Yeah.
So, final question.
Yes.
Clearly that means that you guys are doing something right. You guys have figured something out. What is for the young title and escrow person who's getting into the field and maybe they got aspirations, they're a receptionist too.
Yep.
What is the one thing or a resource that you can recommend to them that will help them stand out and excel?
Ooh. What I would personally recommend is two books. How to Win Friends and Influence People in the Digital Age. It changed the way I write my emails. Tone matters. I think I would, anyone coming into any business that deals with people is be good with people. Like, understand that you're dealing with another human in an experience that they're experiencing. And so you have to be nice. And so, but to be nice in the digital age matters so much because so much of the communication is email.
Yeah.
And if you are emailing bullet points, comes off snarky. You know, and some people like love bullet points. It doesn't matter. You're going to run the gamut of, I'm going to approach people, giving them a tone of voice. So that's what I would like coming into title and escrow. That's my one, like read this book and refine your approach that is you obviously, but man, you have to standardize your approach to like, I'm going to treat people nice and kind every time. That's what I'd recommend.
And that's How to Win Friends in the Digital Age.
Yeah, How to Win Dale Carnegie. So it's like his, one of his books. It's like How to Win Friends and Influence People. But there's a version called In the Digital Age and talks about like emails and social media and voice and tone and how you structure your emails where it's welcoming.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I called it title poetry.
Yeah.
Because there's a better way to do it than email communicate and sell from the desk. Than other, there's better ways to do it.
You know, I was just at a meeting a few days ago last week, and it was a similar conversation where just like how you write, like even how you text versus how you email, it's a different kind of writing. In emails, a bunch of us were finding that we were using exclamation marks a lot just because that emphasizes that like, hey, this isn't a curt tone. This is friendly. We're excited to say hi. Because if you do that, all of a sudden your engagement rate changes for you.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Well, it's like someone says, hey, I need to ask you a question. And it's like, do they say, hey, I need to ask you a question? Or it's like, hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't, you got to read between the lines. No, you got to read the whole email to realize, oh, he was asking it like that. Now, if your email, if you're asking it like that and your email conveys a different message, I mean, that's body language without the body. Like you got to be conscious of that.
This, that's where, so my past education, I have a master's in teaching English to speakers of other languages. And so I was, this is one of those areas where I get a little nerdy because like something like 60% of our communication, it's physical. It's eye movements, where we're looking at, how we're speaking, this, all that. But then the next 40% even gets chopped down further because then you get it into connotations, which is like, what is the feeling of your words? Then you go into the innotation of your words because you can say, hey, versus hey, different meaning. Go into the cadence of your speech. All of that is like another like 70 to 80, maybe sometimes even like more than that percentage of your speech. The actual semantic value of your words, the dictionary definition, it's like 10 to 20%, if that. And so when we're online and we see these articles, we see comments, we see text messages, no wonder people have a bad time communicating. It's because you're only getting 10% of the data that evolutionarily, if that's how you want to frame it, that's how we experience. That's how we see things. It's like we're starving for air and we're suffocating.
Yeah. And I think it's very important to always be adapting. Like you can't, like I became aware of it and conscious of it. So then I was like, well, now I have to do better every chance I find the reason to, because mm-hmm. like even like emails, for instance, I never say hi, hello anymore. I say always good morning, good afternoon. If I'm writing, it's always a good evening.
Mm.
Because my buddy gets a hey, my friend gets a hi. Even if they're my friend in the business, and in this, I don't ever want to run the risk of my email getting forwarded as a casual email right. interaction, because I've been burned that way on the receiving and forwarding end of emails, where I'm like, no, that's not the tone. This is business. This is work. This is how I want to always show up. My email should always be able to be forwarded.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes how I write.
That's interesting. I've never thought of it like that. Cause yes, in my field, I tend to fall into that. Like, hey, we're working, but you know what? We're going to work together. These projects are often they're very special to people's businesses. And so like, it's good to have like intimate is a poor word probably, but there's like an intimate connection. But no, you're right, because you kind of have to lean a little bit into that.
And but it takes time. Yeah. It takes a lot of thought. And so I, as a you know, maybe we'll talk about this later, but as a human who needs to like diverse, like I have to spend my time wisely on emails too.
Mm.
So some people, it's gonna be really quick because I'm gonna spend my time, like I'm in the middle of an email right now. It's long. It's an essay.
Wow.
But I am meeting two individuals at different parts of their life and explaining. And I'm like, okay, I could bullet point this, or I could convey a sense of security with every paragraph. That's way different. So when they read it, they're going to be like, okay. That's why when I draft it, I'm like, I want them to follow a sense of emotions from the top to the end and it being good at the end. And so I structure my emails that way to certain few scenarios and people and humans and situations. But most of it, it's like, okay, quick emails, there's a place for that too.
Yeah. Like you can't spend 30 to 45 minutes on an email every time you have to send it.
No,
never get anything done.
But sometimes you do.
Yeah.
If it matters, if the impact is going to be the impact that you want. Yeah.
Glad you do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sergey, thank you for sitting down.
Of course. Thank you.
I'm always enjoying these conversations. This is fun. Next time, we're going to be talking a little bit more onto entrepreneurship.
Oh, love it.
Yeah. So thank you guys for tuning in. We look forward to having you guys back in our next episode. Until then, take care and be well. Bye-bye.